listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network for podcasting or live program scheduling. Hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Yeah. You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity. Because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Denmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshie. Hotep family, hope you had a great weekend. Hope you had a chance to do all the things you wanted to do, needed to do, should do, better do, must do, can do, and will do. And I hope that the weather was accommodating for you to do it. But if it wasn't, you got it done anyway. I know you did, because that's the kind of brother and sister that you is. You don't procrastinate. You don't put off nothing. No, you get it done. That's right. Keep on getting it done, y'all. Because the more we continue to do that, the better our condition, our situation will be. And the more we will see the need to work together, the need to be for and with each other. This is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to us live, you can always go to the archives. Just go to timeforanawakening.com on their website and look for the red, black, and green lion with Africa imposed on it, and then click onto that, and they'll take you to where previously recorded programs that are dated and titled, so you can check out the archives if you can't listen to us live. Other programming here on Time for an Awakening Media. This evening, Acres of Diamonds. All times are going to give our Eastern times. Acres of Diamonds from 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern. Public Affairs Programming right out of Philadelphia. Let's Buy Black 365 from 8 to 9. Let's Buy Black 365 from 8 to 9. On Tuesday, tomorrow, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. And then on Wednesday, Revive with Sister POC, Proof of Consciousness. Her program begins at 8 p.m., 8 until 10. Friday, if it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern time, you know what time it is, y'all. That's right. It's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard, 8 p.m. on Friday. Saturday, Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore, 10 a.m. to 12 noon. And then on Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., you're right, it ain't me. It's Sister BOC with her program, Revive. And then Sunday evening, 7 p.m. until Time for an Awakening, once again with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Those are the programs here on the Time for an Awakening Media. Still others to come. We talk about it, but they'll arrive when they arrive, and that's how that goes. But you can call our call-in number at 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832, and you can give us your questions, comments, or concerns, or as in this program, your African perspective on the issues of our day. African perspectives. We Buy Black. WeBuyBlack.com. Get everything you need from American African-owned businesses from WeBuyBlack.com, the largest online marketplace for American African-owned businesses. They have a kiosk here in Atlanta at the Greenbrier Mall, where they're selling laundry detergent, soaps, all kinds of stuff, liniments for your sore, aching bones and shoulders and knees and whatever, you know, toothpaste, batteries. All of these things are produced by us. Check out WeBuyBlack.com. Also, too, WeBuyBlack.com is having a convention next month and a few weeks away, November 16th and the 17th at the Cobb Galleria Mall. Go online to get the particulars on the convention of We Buy Black. Books. Better is a book than a memorial plaque in the temple. That's what it said in Kemetic writing. They understood. We wrote things down. Yes, I know people talk about we got an oral tradition. Yes, we do. But we also have a written tradition. We were the first ones to write. We were the first ones to scribe. When I looked at that, when Anthony Browder was here for the African Heritage Studies Association and in his presentation. No, I apologize. No, that was not the presentation. He was here 2 weeks before that for the ASA restoration project that they're doing in Kemet. And a 25th dynasty, the Manubian dynasty, is being excavated and restored. And when he showed some of the video or PowerPoint, you could see vivid, beautiful colors. You could see the writing and the detail. No, we are a literate people. We are a literate people. Now, I'm not going to say that all around the continent of Africa is the same. No, it is not. But one thing is for sure, the height. And that's why many of us who members of the Association for the Study of Classical African Civilizations, or ASCAC, why we praise that time in history, because that is a moment. And it's a long moment, too, because the Kemetic civilization lasted over 5,000 years. But there was that moment that we were the light of the world. People came from far and wide to sit at our feet, to sit at the feet of African people. And we taught them. We didn't diss them. We taught them. So check that out. Books. The Shrine of the Black Madonna, located 946 Ralph David Abernathy Boulevard in the west end of Atlanta. Phone number 404-549-8676. 404-549-8676. And you can get whatever it is that you need from the Shrine of the Black Madonna. You want some clothing? You want some furniture? You want some artifacts? You want some books? You want the red, black, and green shoes? You want books for children? All of that is right there at the Shrine of the Black Madonna in the West End. Another bookstore is Medu Nature. The Medu bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. If you go there and they don't have the book that you want, just let them know and they'll order it for you. I know because I've done it. And another bookstore, my good brother, Brother Jamu, Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore located in Lithonia, phone number 404-519-8107, 404-519-8107. And, of course, there's Light and the Black Dot, and he also has books and other things. He also has the red, black, and green shoes. And there's some white ones. I think I told y'all that last week. They got some white ones out now. And, you know, I don't know if you could go online, NASC. I got to get that for y'all, NASGAS. And so you can look them for yourself and maybe order offline if in your area you don't have it. I mean, here, fortunately, I can go to the Shrine. I can go to Black Dot. I can go to another brother that I know who's selling them as well. You know, so, but do what you want. Do what you can. Get them. That's my contention. Ulu, Us Lifting Us. Ulu broadcasts every Thursday evening, 9 p.m. on Blog Talk Radio. 929-477-2789. 929-477-2789. Brothers and sisters, we desperately need to have an alternative to this economic situation that we are unfortunately bombarded with or have succumbed to make a change for us. And that is collective. That's right. Cooperative economics. The spirit of Ujamaa. But as we like to say, family-centered economics. Pulling our resources to do for ourselves. To provide goods and services for us and our people. To provide jobs for us. That's what it's all about. So check out usliftingus.com. Usliftingus.com. Call in on Thursday. Ask questions. 929-477-2789. Us Lifting Us. Ulu. When we pulled our money together and just saying that, hey, this is what we're going to do, somebody said, well, hey, show me what you can do. And we did. We created Cafe Ulu right here in Atlanta, 2036 Sylvan Road in the Sylvan Plaza. Cafe Ulu, open Monday from 11 a.m. to 7, Tuesday through Friday, 6 a.m. to 7, Saturday and Sunday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. And we sell coffee. We sell coffee. That's right. Ethiopian, Tanzanian, Kenyan, Cameroon, and more. We have loose teas. Everything at Cafe Ulu is produced by us. Everything that's there. In fact, one drink, the Vitality drink by my good brother and friend, Brother Novak Young, Ambrosia. Ambrosia. Check out Brother Novak's website, Complete One Beauty. Complete One, the word one, one O-N-E. Complete One Beauty, all, you know, when you do that thing on the internet, .com, CompleteOneBeauty.com, or else you can call. You can call 678-508-7254. 678-508-7254 and get some delicious Vitality drink. The benefits and the, you know, smandaria, the hibiscus, ginger, chlorophyll, turmeric, cinnamon, aloe, cayenne, just a wealth of ingredients that will spur your vitality, get you going, get you on your way, having you do your thing. Brother Bomani, my good friend Bomani Tayembe, AfricaForTheAfricans.org. Go to AfricaForTheAfricans.org. He is getting our brothers and sisters, taking them to Africa again. The many times that he has done this, this time next month, very soon. I'm not sure if there are, we'll get him on the air, we'll get him on the program real soon, November 16th to the 26th, less than $3,000, flying into Accra, Ghana for 3 days. You'll be in Accra, Ghana for 3 days when you fly into Accra. And then the next 3 days, you'll be in Kumasi, where the Ashanti King has he's just draped in gold. And then 3 days in the Cape Coast area, Cape Coast Dungeon. I'm quite sure you're going to see my good friend, Sister Amakus, at One Africa, right there on the ocean, because she's situated right between Cape Coast and Elmina Dungeons. The Dungeons. Yep, check out my good brother Bomani. If you want to check out some photos from previous tours, Facebook.com/Bomani, B-O-M-A-N-I, Facebook.com/Bomani. If you want to check out videos, YouTube.com/Bomani 2007. And he has those from this year's tour that he gave in May. So he has those. Conference coming up in December 7th, 8th, and 9th. In Washington, D.C., it is the Chemetamorphosis Conference. Chemetamorphosis, you know, just like a metamorphosis, a chemetamorphosis, which is, of course, once you learn what has happened in Kemet with us, you will have a metamorphosis. You will have a change in you, a knowledge within you, a feeling within you. The conference celebrates the 10-year anniversary of the ASA Restoration Project, named after Dr. Asa Hilliard, the first American-African-funded archaeological excavation in Kemet. And so we're looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to that. And that's going to be happening soon. So check that out. Check that out. Like I said, had a good weekend with the attending the conference, the African Heritage Studies Association, an organization started by one of my heroes, one of my all-time favorite scholars, Dr. John Henry Clark. And this is their 49th year, their 50th year. They are very ambitious. They want to go to Kemet for less than, well, actually it's $4,000. I've seen the itinerary. It kind of reminded me of the, almost identical to the itinerary that I had when I went to Kemet, which I think was now 10 years ago. Whoo, man, time flies. And I suggest that, I mean, I'll be announcing it, because to me, if you can go, you know, if you can, and it's double occupancy, so you pay $4,000, your roommate pays $4,000, y'all occupy, I mean, yeah, I know it's a lot, but hey, you know, but this trip, you know, you're going to be in Cairo for all those festivities there, and a few other temples you'll see. You might go to Memphis or Menefer, and you'll board a plane to fly down to Aswan, where the dam is. You'll check out Abu Simbel. You know, to me, if you go to Kemet, now naturally you're going to fly into Cairo. You're going to fly into Cairo, and you'll see the pyramids at Giza. You'll see Hori Market, or what the Greeks call the Sphinx. You'll see those things, but you got to go hundreds of miles south. Hundreds of miles south. That's why people fly down to Aswan to check out the dam. And of course, Abu Simbel. To me, it's like going to Paris and you don't see the Eiffel Tower. Going to London and you don't see whatever those attractions might be. Or, you know, go to those places and you don't see the Louvre Museum in Paris, or the British Museum in London, or the museum in Germany, you know. Berlin, the Berlin Museum. But you must see Abu Simbel. Abu Simbel is an engineering feat. I think I mentioned that one time before, but it really is. So you'll see Abu Simbel, and then you'll get on the boat and you'll sail north. But that's downriver, because remember, the Nile River, which is the longest river in the world, flows from south to north. It flows from south to north. Unlike the Mississippi and other rivers, the Mississippi flows from north to south. Starts up in Canada somewhere, Minnesota, and then divides the country literally east to west. So the Mississippi straight down south into the Delta, into the Gulf, New Orleans, so forth. So as you sail north, you stop off at various places. You'll stop off in the Nubian village. You'll stop off at some other temples and so forth. And of course, dining on the ship, it's real cool. And then of course you make it back into some other stuff, and then you fly back to the States. You fly back to New York. So, but that's a trip that that they're definitely going to take. I really enjoyed the conference. My good sister, a good friend, Sister Asmira H, who is a legislative assistant, provided a wealth of great information. She wanted to make it clear that she was not representing any congressional thing, that she was there as a sister who was a Pan-Africanist, a sister who was down with a cause for our people, and she did a outstanding job. But yesterday, because, you know, the conference ended Saturday afternoon, but yesterday we went to Montgomery, Alabama, to the Equal Justice Initiative in Alabama. I know you've probably seen it on Facebook, or got an email, or you've seen it on news, or in some segment you've seen Oprah talking with Brother Byron Stevenson, the brother who helped create the initiative, who helped create the museum and the memorial in Montgomery, you know. So we went, and believe me, it is emotional. It is very emotional. You're looking at
literally, and this, like there's 4,000, but probably a lot more, 4,000 ones that they feel they have recorded, most with names, some with incidents of why. And when and when you go through the memorial, I'm talking about the memorial, not the museum yet. When you go through the memorial and you see these things hanging, you know, and people are trying to figure out how are they doing, because you see on the outside, closer to the outer part of the of the memorial, are they start in alphabetical order, you know, Alabama, Arkansas, all the way around. And then, but that's because they're all together. And so sometimes you can step back and now you can see something from North Carolina or something from South Carolina or something from Tennessee or some other southern state, Florida, Georgia, you know, where somebody has been lynched and they have a name and a date. Sometime unknown, I was looking at a South Carolina one where they had it, 5 unknown, the same date. The date was March 17th, 1868. March 17th, 1868. Now, I know that March 17th is St. Patrick's Day. And we know what Caucasians be doing on St. Patrick's Day today or in the last number of years. Maybe it was the same on that day, that on that day Caucasians were reveling and getting drunk and just decided to go hang some brothers and sisters and maybe even some children. There were 4 unknown names, a name unknown, but hung or killed March 17th, 1868. Because when you go into the memorial and you begin to read some of the little synopsis of why people were killed, killed because he wanted to get his property back, killed because he wanted to get his shovel back, killed because, of course, you know, the always, you know, fraternizing or saying something with a Caucasian woman. You know that one. That one's always certain. But it doesn't have to be that. It could be anything. Or it could be nothing. Brothers and sisters, once again, as I try desperately.
This call is being recorded.
And I will continue to try desperately to talk about the problems that happen to us and why they're happening by giving us an understanding of who we're dealing with. We're dealing with a people who in their evolutionary process are violent prone, sexist, racist, rape culture, violent culture individuals. They have no moral fiber. They have no moral being. They don't give a damn. And so when you see these synopsis, you understand, damn, why did they kill that kid? Or why did they kill that lady? For that? Really? That deserved that? Oh, I got a caller. 215. Good morning. I'm trying to get this caller in. Good morning. Oh, maybe they don't want to talk. But so what? I do. I'm going to talk. So, you know, going through that memorial, and they know, and Byron Stevenson has stated that this is, you know, this is not all that happened. What they have displayed there, they know there were so many that they don't, we don't know of, and this is just 1877 to 1950, 73 years. This is just 73 years of documentation with happening at 73. And even within that 73 years, these are not all the documented lynchings, murders of our people. There were many more. I remember reading briefly Ginsburg's book, 100 Years of Lynching. That came out way back in the 60s, early 70s, I believe. But just like then and today, there's documentation proving the inhumane, brutal treatment, the terror that we have experienced in society and still experience through mass incarceration, police brutality and murder. And of course, and I'm going to say it this way, how we hate ourselves to the point that we kill, that there's some of us who are more afraid of each other than we are of any external force. And even though probably the external force, Europeans, Caucasians, is the problem, is the issue, but because of what they have done to our minds, we are more afraid of each other. But yet and still, we have documented what they have done to us. And I'm saying we have to understand it in the context of their evolutionary development. It is who and what they are. And that's why there is no, I don't give a damn how many memorials. And in fact, yesterday, if my friend is out there, and if she can call, I know she's trying to get back to D.C. to resume her work on Capitol Hill and all of the things that this beautiful sister does. But if she can call and give some information, it would be appreciated, you know, because the reality is that there is nothing we can do. I said all the time that Caucasians suffer from cognitive dissonance. They believe that they are superior, that they are superior, you know. And nothing we can do will change that mindset because they suffer from cognitive dissonance. Even though there's a plethora of information stating otherwise, that they are not. But this is what they have perpetuated. This is what many people believe. And because of what they have done to us, we suffer from cognitive dissonance as well. We believe we're inferior. Anytime you behave the way we behave, anytime you have such deep self-hatred and fear of one another, so the museum, the Legacy Museum, and the National Memorial for Peace and Justice. Let me read about a little pamphlet that they have on the memorial. There's a Dr. King quote, "True peace is not merely the absence of tension. It is the presence of justice." So if there's true peace, we have a caller. Good morning, caller. So she's calling in, but I can't hear. I hope she can hear me. I'm not sure what the problem is. I apologize, but she called in, but I can't hear the caller. So apologize about that. I have no idea what I can do because everything seems to be what it's supposed to be. I don't see. So, there is a problem. Let me try again. So let me put on some music and I'll see if I can correct this problem right quick. Brothers and sisters, you're listening to African Perspective here on the Motherland Media Network. We'll be right back. We have a technical difficulty that I'm going to try to rectify.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Brothers and sisters, we're here on African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. I want to take this call. Good morning, caller. Still, I'm having a problem. Are you kidding? I thought I'd rectify that. Good morning, caller. Well, okay. I have no idea what I've done wrong. Good morning, caller. Okay. Well, I must apologize. I'm going to try to have the sister on. So we can talk about this at a time that we made sure that we can engage in this dialogue because it is very important. I apologize to her and apologize to you, our listeners. Is there some technical difficulty? Because, this is the internet. And sometimes it's not, I'm trying to be consistent as I can be. And believe me, and with the help of my good brother and friend, Brother Kwaku, we've pretty much been that for a good number of months now. We've been on Time for an Awakening for a year, and it's been evolving considering things we had to do, equipment we had to get, and so forth. But still, nothing's perfect, particularly in this realm, so I apologize again. And to me, if the sister can call back and get on, maybe that's what it takes. I don't know. I hope that I will get callers and you can hear me. So the National Memorial for Peace and Justice, the National Memorial for Peace and Justice is the nation's first memorial dedicated to the legacy of enslaved African people traumatized. Let me say here, because if you've listened to this program, you know, substitute words. I don't use white or black. For black, I use American African if they're talking specifically about us or just African. And for white, I don't use that to describe Caucasians because that's what they are. They're European. European or Caucasians. You know, I don't use I was reading a piece talking about discipline when they mean punishment. So I don't use the word discipline because discipline is a good word. Discipline is what we must have. Discipline is what we must instill in ourselves and each other and our children. Discipline. Because if you don't have discipline, because discipline is self-imposed order. If you don't have any order on yourself, society will impose order on you, and that is punishment. But they don't use that word in the news, in the parlance, because of the negative connotations that the word punishment has. But that's what they mean. All the time when I'm watching the sports, yeah, this player did this and that, and they're going to discipline him. No, they're going to punish him. They're going to fine him. They're going to suspend him. They're going to punish him. But they don't want to use the word punishment. So, brothers and sisters, hopefully maybe for you too, the next time you hear somebody make a reference or say the word discipline, when you know they mean punishment, continue to say that to yourself. But you know, there's a lot of other words we don't use, and the word yesterday that was consistently and continuously, which is understandable, was the word slave. And believe me, I'm going to tell you, when you change the words, when you make them more corrective in terms of what they were, because we were not slaves, we were captives. A slave is somebody or something or submits its will to a master. We never submitted. Oh, master, I am your slave. I'm your humble slave. What is it that you desire, oh, master? No, that's not us. We've always tried to get free. We were captives. We fought. We resisted. There are over 400, let alone just like the lynchings, 4,000 lynchings. But that's the ones that they know of. Even some of the ones that they didn't know who they were, but they documented saying unknown. Because sometimes these crackers would just be so evil and mean-spirited, they would just do it for fun. Because they know they could do it and not have any repercussions. No consequences. Nothing. Out drinking and having a good time saying, let's go lynch us a. And here you send your son, your daughter, down the road to your cousin's house, to your sister, brother's house, to exchange. You take this soap down there. I just made this soap. You take this soap down to Aunt Judah's house, down the road. And she got some greens for me coming out her garden. She got some stuff. So you do that, boy. You do that quick. Okay, now? Okay, mama. Wow, he's been gone a long time. Ain't no phone. I can't call him. But we talked the other day, and I told her I'm going to send my boy down there with that soap because I'm going to make this soap. He's been gone too long. You go down there. No, baby, he ain't never come here. You send him here? I know I told you supposed to send him here with the soap because I had the green for you. He never made it. He encountered some crackers. He didn't do nothing. Probably didn't say nothing. He probably tried to run. They caught him. They beat him to death. They hung him up. They might have cut off limbs, his penis. They might have shot him. I'm saying to us, dear brothers and sisters, we're dealing with a people we don't know that we think that we can appeal to them morally, that we can appeal to them to make them respect our humanity when I'm saying to you already, they have an idea that they are superior and we are inferior, and there's nothing we can do or say to change that dynamic. So stop it. American Africans humiliated by racial segregation and Jim Crow, and people of color burdened with contemporary presumptions of guilt and police violence. Set on 6-acre site, the memorial uses sculpture, art, literature, and design to conceptualize racial terror and oppression. The space is the visual and physical manifestations of years of work by the Equal Justice Initiative, the EJI, to identify more than 4,000 American African men, women, and children who were lynched between 1877 and 1950. Like I said, just 73 years they documented. So you know the years prior and even some after 1950. Just like they had that brother that was hung here in Atlanta. I think 2015 or 2016, I'm not sure. I believe it was 2015. They had a Klan rally. Where do they have Klan rallies? Here in Georgia, Stone Mountain. Stone Mountain is located north. It's part of the Atlanta metro area that they count for Atlanta's metro population. Stone Mountain. In fact, when I was the second marriage, but I was out here with my youngest, and we went up to Stone Mountain. Went up there, checked out the site and everything like that, and then the following week, they had a Klan rally, a big Klan rally. And so they had a Klan rally at that time, and this brother is in Piedmont Park. Piedmont Park is like the central of the city, within the city, one of the largest parks in the city, hanging from a tree. Somebody just texted me and said that brother's lynching was 2016, 2 years ago, 2016, and they said it was suicide. He hung himself on a tree, and they, the authorities, the mayor, and the official said it was suicide. There is no markings that he showed that he climbed up this tree. There is nothing. There is nothing. He was lynched. The memorial structure at the center of the site is constructed of over 800 steel monuments, one for each county in the U.S., where racial terror lynchings took place, engraved with the names of the victims. The memorial is more than a static monument. That's right, because sometimes the wind blows because they're just hanging on a pole. And the steel is rusted. Outside the structure is a field of identical monuments waiting to be claimed and installed in the counties they represented. Over time, the memorial will serve as a report on which parts of the country have confronted the truth of this terror and which have not. I don't know about them confronting the truth of the terror of lynching. Any of them. I don't believe that they will. Went to the museum, and me and my friend were sitting and I watched, because a lot of museums are interactive. You can pick up the phone and you can talk to a brother or sister who is incarcerating, and he'll explain why he's incarcerated and what happened, how long they've been in there. That's really interesting because it's almost like they're really talking to you, because they are. It's video, but you pick up the phone, then they show that they pick up the phone and they talk to you. Then there was one, we were sitting there and we were listening, and a Caucasian lady came up and put her hand over our shoulder and says, "I'm so sorry. Oh, I'm so sorry." I mean, it is emotional. It is sad. It's a true museum and monument to the Europeans' inhumanity to humanity. Their inhumanity to humanity. Because I'm just talking about us. I mean, the devastation to us is deeper. Let's get that real. Let's get that as a fact. The devastation to African people upon which Europeans inflicted on us is deeper than any damn thing that the Europeans done to others. Well, what Brother Oshie, didn't they wipe out the Tasmanian? Okay, yeah, there's some genocide. And we're still here, are we? But are we? When you consider how we behave, when you consider what they've done to our minds, and believe me, if they could, they would do it. Yes, what I'm saying, if they could inflict genocide on us, they would. And some may argue it is in the process. It's been in the process. Especially when you look at here in America. globally, Caucasians are experiencing negative population growth. But here in this country, we're experiencing zero population growth. That should never happen. That shouldn't be. Why? Because our population is young. Our population is young. So we shouldn't be experiencing zero population growth, but why? Why has our population been holding at, in fact, it has decreased. Because one could make the argument our population went off 17%, but now it's, they say it's 13%. Because of mass incarceration, homosexuality, substance abuse, going not with the sisters and brothers, not getting hooked up to have children. Brothers pretty much, more so than sisters, dealing with Caucasians or anybody else outside of who we are. So, man. The Legacy Museum, the museum itself, like I said, it, you know, when you go through there and you read stuff that's there and you see some of the video clips that they have, read all the information, and it deals with, of course, our enslavement, and it deals with segregation in the 60s. It deals with mass incarceration of the day. I mean, it deals with the issues that are affecting American people. The Legacy Museum, from enslavement to mass incarceration. Built on the site of a former warehouse where enslaved African people were imprisoned in Montgomery. The thing about Montgomery, Montgomery was a huge point of sale, so to speak, of African people. And even though we rode through the town and the city of Montgomery, very clean city, so, you know, it's the capital of Alabama. And, of course, drove by the Dexter Avenue Baptist Church where Dr. King, the first church that he pastored in Montgomery with the Montgomery bus boycott. The Legacy Museum is located midway between the historic captive market and the main river dock and train station where tens of thousands of enslaved Africans were trafficked during the height of the domestic captive trade. By 1860, Montgomery was the capital of the domestic captive trade in Alabama, which was one of the two largest captive-owning states in America. The Legacy Museum employs unique technology to dramatize the enslavement of American Africans and tells the story of how captivity evolved through the eras of racial terror, lynchings, legalized racial segregation, and mass incarceration. Visitors encounter a powerful sense of place when they enter the museum and confront a slave pen replicas or captive pen replicas, where they can see, hear, and get close to what it was like to be imprisoned, awaiting sale at the nearby auction block. First-person accounts from enslaved people narrate the sights and the sounds of the domestic captive trade. Extensive research and videography helps visitors understand the racial terrorism of lynching and humiliation of the Jim Crow South. Compelling visuals and data-rich exhibits give visitors the opportunity to investigate America's history of racial injustice and its legacy, and to connect generations of Americans impacted by the narrative of racial difference. You know, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk more about this. Yes, we are. We're going to talk more about this. And you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network. You stay right here with us. We'll be right back.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
believing all the dreams inside of you. Don't stop achieving, yeah. Let some love shine on through. And don't fight the feeling, just keep on
listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com, blacktalkradionetwork.com, and we're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern Time. Other programs here on Time for an Awakening Media here on Mondays. All times I'm going to give are, of course, at Eastern Times. Acres of Diamonds, Monday from 6 to 8. Let's Buy Black 365 from 8 to 9. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. Wednesdays, Revive with Sister PLC from 8 to 10. Friday, 8 p.m., Time for an Awakening. That's right, Time for an Awakening with Brother Ellie and Brother Richard on Friday, 8 p.m. Saturday Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore, 10 a.m. to 12 noon. And then Revive with Sister PLC on Sunday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. And then Sunday evening, 7 p.m., once again, it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And, of course, the number to call is 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. I'm going to go to the Atlanta Black Star, still in the vein of inequality that happens. Five big myths debunked by a New York Times report on race, economics, and gender inequality. But let me go back to the Equal Justice Initiative. And you can go to online, Museum and Memorial. dot EJI.org. I repeat, museumandmemorial.eji.org. The EJI, of course, is the Equal Justice Initiative. Equal Justice Initiative believes that the history of racial inequality and economic injustice in America has created continuing challenges for all Americans. Well, I don't know about for all Americans, but I sure hell know it creates some serious challenges for us. And more must be done to advance our collective goal of equal justice for all, which, of course, is very laudable. But, of course, I maintain it hasn't happened. It ain't happening now, and it ain't going to happen. I'm just keeping it real. I don't have a defeatist attitude. I just keep it real. Headquartered in Montgomery, Alabama, the Equal Justice Initiative is a private nonprofit 501(c) organization that provides legal representation to indigent defendants and prisoners who have been denied fair and just treatment in the legal system. For more information, just visit EJI.org. But if you want to check out what the, how it looks with the museum and the memorial, go to museumandmemorial.eji.org. The Equal Justice Initiative, Brother Byron Stevenson. Five big myths debunked. Five big myths debunked by the New York Times report on race, economic, and gender inequality. The breadth and depth and reach of systematic racism in America is something which American African people are intimately familiar as they live the reality of discrimination every day and suffer its consequences. Yet, their experiences are often anecdotal and not data-driven. And even if they were, society tends to downplay or even turn it up a little bit. There we go. I can hear myself a lot better. So I hope you can too. Apologize. Yet their experiences are often anecdotal and not data-driven. And even if they were, society tends to downplay or even dismiss their cries of injustice and urge them to stop complaining, work harder, and pull yourself up by your bootstraps. A new report from the New York Times based on a study, and this is an article from this year, from March of this year. A new report from the New York Times based on a study from researchers at Stanford, Harvard, and the U.S. Census Bureau examines race and economic opportunity in the U.S., shedding light on racial disparities in income and offering suggestions as to how to overcome them. This intergenerational examination of inequality and how it changes across the generations helps to dispel some myths. Myth number one. But let me just say this, you know. As I continue to read this, I have zero, not a shred of faith or belief that this situation can change for us positively, for us as a collective. I don't argue with what individuals can do. That's ludicrous. That's asinine. The proof is there all the time. I'm not arguing with an individual. I don't care about what an individual does. I'm talking about us as African people here in America, American Africans, black people. How this situation affects us and the fact that our situation will, as a people, will never improve. Myth number one, it's about class, not race. And all that black people need to do is pull themselves up by their own bootstraps. God, I hate that. If there is an American dream, that dream is working out for some but not for others, and it's based on race and ethnicity. The study examined the upward and downward mobility of five groups across generations: Hispanics, non-Hispanic, Caucasians, American Africans, Asians, and Indigenous Americans or Native Americans, and their future earnings trajectories. Researchers found that American Africans and indigenous people, Native American children, have far higher rates of downward mobility. So us and the indigenous people whose land they stole and damn near wiped them out, the both of us, we have far higher rates of downward mobility than any other groups. For example, American African children born into the top quintile on the economic ladder are nearly as likely to fall to the bottom income quintile as they are to remain at the top. In other words, this is a matter of race, not class. And I know we've heard that. We've heard different people talk about that. In fact, that damn fool, Kanye mess, he mentioned this is not about race. This is about class. Well, if you're in a position, if you're in a position to have whatever you want to do done, and go wherever you want anytime you want to, you know, then and unimpeded. And to be as foolish as him, and I'm just talking about those people who can do that. I ain't talking about him specifically, but he's a fool. But I'm saying you will come with that same notion, that same belief that this is about, you know, race, not class. No, you'll come to the notion that it's about class. Because I've made it. The others who are like, we're made, it's a class thing. No, it ain't. It always is about culture. Because really no such thing as race, but we'll use that word. There's no such thing as race. Caucasians created race. There's no such thing as race. There's human race, of which African people are the fathers and mothers of. There's cultures. And what Europeans have done is imposed their culture on everybody. And the impact on us has been severe. For example, American African children born into the top quintile of the economic ladder are nearly as likely to fall to the bottom income quintile as they are to remain at the top. In other words, this is a matter of race, not class. As growing up in the high-income households does not provide insurance and guarantee that one will stay there. Because of these differences in economic mobility, American Africans and indigenous Americans or Native Americans are stuck in place across generations. Their positions in the income distribution are unlikely to change over time without efforts to increase their rates of upward mobility, the study said. In addition, while American African children born at the bottom rung of the economic ladder have a 2.5% chance of making it to the top rung, this is the case. This is the case with 10% of Caucasian children. We only have a 2.5. They got 10%. They have 10.6. 8.1% better chance to get it to the top in a system that they control. Duh. And then in also too, look at our, in a system that has deemed us as undesirable, deemed us as inferior. So you know you ain't gonna make it in that system. According to the research, some of the widest racial gaps were found in the wealthiest communities. Once again, demonstrating that race trumps class in the land of this so-called opportunity. American African boys born at the top and falling to the bottom in adult life, along with other American African men who grew up at the bottom and remain there, are part of the same phenomenon and two sides of the same damn coin. Both types of American African men are victims of the same societal forces that are keeping them down and suppressing their aspirations because of who they are. Who runs America? Caucasian men. So who do you think the greatest threat to Caucasian men? And even though, check this out, Caucasian men, there's always more females than males. in species because females reproduce. So it's kind of logical that there would be more females than the males. And given that fact, Caucasian men, I think, are less than 35. I got to get the exact amount, but I know they're not over 40. They show me over, not men. Caucasian people, when you put women in there, add up to like 60-some percent of the people in this country. But the greatest threat to Caucasian men are not sisters, are not Caucasian women, because both Caucasian women and sisters capitulate to Caucasian men. They're not the threat. The greatest threat to Caucasian men are us. And that's why we suffer the way we do. That's why a statistic could come out like that, where a brother in a family well off will either stagnate or be lowered. Because Caucasian men will do any and everything that they have to do to maintain the positions of dominance and control. They don't want to share nothing. They're selfish and greedy. When you go to see that memorial, when you go to see the museum, you'll see what I'm saying. In fact, there's in one of the side pieces here, it says, the crystallization and puts data behind these things that we always knew there was, because always knew they were there, because we either felt it ourselves or we've seen it over time. This is a former Obama staffer whose own life was one of the 20 million of this in this study. A study of 20 million children show fragility of the American dream, because not everybody is intended to make it. This is not a place. They say this, brothers and sisters. But they determine who will and who won't. Now you can be so damn committed, and maybe you will be that person. But please don't have the attitude. You see, I did it. Hell, you can too. Why are you crying? Pick yourself up by your own damn bootstraps. Reality is, this society is not built for Caucasians to make it. This is capitalism. Capitalism is designed that for me to have a lot, you can't have nothing. That's what it means. This is not a system that has distribution of resources and wealth and information and so. No. This is a system designed for the very people who implemented it, the Europeans. Most Caucasian boys raised in wealthy families will stay rich or upper middle class as adults. But American Africans raised in similar rich households, they will not. Very fragile. Myth number two. American African men and women experience the same income gap. Whether men or women, many American African people are struggling out there in today's society. With that said, the study concludes that the income gap between American African and Caucasian people is driven by the disparities American African men face. Among those people who came from families with comparable incomes, American African women grow up to earn slightly more than Caucasian women with little or no wage gap. While American African men earn considerably less than Caucasian men. For men, whether high school completion, college attendance, or incarceration, the racial gap is larger for men than it is for women. Consider that 21% of American African men in the lowest family income group are incarcerated, higher than any other demographic. However, American African men raised in millionaire households in the top 1% of Americans are likely to face prison as Caucasian men grow up in households with annual incomes. Let me see this again. It says, however, an American African who was raised in a well-to-do, in a home where there's a millionaire in the top 1% of Americans, are as likely to face prison as a Caucasian man who grew up in a household with an annual income of $36,000. It is not class. It is culture. The European culture despises African people. The European culture hates African people. Brother Oshi, if they do, why they be risking cancer, you know? Why they be risking cancer toning their skin and, you know, tanning their skin and putting collagen in their lips to get fuller lips because they got them thin monkey lips? Why they be, you know, getting booty implants because they got that flat ass? Why all these things you say they hate? Yes, brother. They hate us because they can't be us. They hate us because they ain't us. And that hatred of us is displayed in various ways. It's systemic. It's systemic. While American African women and girls face great inequality on various levels, something is happening to American African boys as they turn into men. While American African and Caucasian boys both do better in communities in which there is low poverty, but American African boys are faring worse than their Caucasian counterparts in 99% of census tracts. Earning less, having lower economic mobility in adulthood, despite coming from the same economic level. So if there is some American, and I've seen and read this too before, and they use Ohio, they use Shaker Heights and that kind of thing, saying that even though these brothers and sisters were living in a more affluent area, still their situation wasn't that great. These results suggest differences in ways American Africans experience racism, their racial stereotyping as criminals, and the school punishments and, see, that says it's school disciplining. See what I'm saying? No. The home disciplines. When the child comes out the womb, the home should do it. The mother, the father, the parents, I'm saying that to say, sometimes the parents may not be the mother or the father. Because grandparents take on that responsibility as parents or foster parents or whatever. That's the responsibility of instilling discipline. Because once again, discipline is self-imposed order. And when you don't impose any order on yourself, the society will impose order on you. And that's why you have all of these prisons. That's why America is about 5 cents. Boy, Oshi, you got to get it together, dear brother. Is 5% of the world's population, but they're 25% of the prison population globally. 25% of all the people incarcerated around the world, the land of the free, the home of the brave, the great America, has 25% incarcerated, with a mass incarceration of American Africans. These results suggest differences in ways American Africans experience racism, their racial stereotyping as criminals, and the school punishments and employment discrimination they face. And that's what the New York Times was stating. Myth number three. The American-African-Caucasian gap is due to the American-African family. This gap that is experienced between American Africans and Caucasians is due to our family? Really? While some discussions on racial income inequality may attribute the life of outcomes American Africans to our culture, now, I will admit that American African culture is not real African culture. Let me say that again. American African culture is what happens when you are alienated and ostracized from the dominant culture. So we've created some things in the culture that we experience here that is not African. We can say it's American African, but what we experience and what happens many times has an adverse effect on us as a people because of the so-called culture that we have. It's not conducive to growth collectively. And many times it's not to even conducive to growth individually. For example, as the researchers learned, there are intergenerational gaps between American, African, and Caucasian men, but not for women, making the ability argument implausible. Although there are racial gaps in test scores for men and women, but has American, African men and women have, although they have lower test scores, lower SAT scores than their respective Caucasian counterparts, for example, but American African women have outcomes similar to Caucasian women, suggesting that the standardization of tests did not provide accurate measure of differences in ability, insofar as it is relative for earning by race, perhaps because stereotype anxiety or racial biases in tests. But sisters, and of course we all know that sisters get more degrees than damn near anybody, and of course sisters got good jobs, and you know they give them good jobs and this, that, and the other. So, you know, like here in Atlanta, there was a piece recently a few years ago where sisters here in Atlanta were talking about, where are the men? In fact, there was one sister put out there on Facebook, don't come here. Don't be coming to Atlanta. There's a scarcity of men, and we got too many sisters here, too many black folks here. Don't come to Atlanta. But the reality is, there never is one woman for every man. There is a man for every woman, but there's not a woman for every man. No, I messed that up, didn't I? I sure did. There's not a man for every woman, but there is a woman for every man. The reason why? Because there are more women than men. So there's not a man for every woman. That's why in some societies there is polygamy. Or there's polyamory, which of course is saying that we know this man and this woman, we know what we're doing. And the other woman that's involved in us, she know what she's doing. So we all know what we're doing. And we do it. And we respect that. And if that's y'all thing, y'all go ahead. American African marriage rates are much lower than those of Caucasians, meaning lower household incomes with one breadwinner in the house, which some may attribute to the financial disparities across culture. Says race, but of course I'm saying there's no such thing as race. But, you know, if I say it again, it's in the article. But it is culture. However, the report found that the income gaps between American African men and their Caucasian counterparts persist when they grow up in homes with identical family structures and the same income and educational level. These income gaps persist. They're there. When they grow up in homes with identical family structures, the reality is it is there. Myth number four. Nothing can be done. Now, I'm going to tell you, that's not a myth as far as I'm concerned. I believe nothing can be done. You know, I believe that. I believe nothing can be done. I believe that no matter, in fact, the only thing that can be done is a redistribution of wealth, which will never happen, reparations, which will never happen. But the redistribution of wealth, that ain't happening for sure. But the reparations could, because I'm down with reparations, because to me, not to seek reparations from these Caucasians who have done what they have done to us, please, not to seek reparations, some type of repair, whatever how that works out, whether it's monetary, whether it's information, whether it's education, whatever it amounts to, when we understand that this is what this is, not them, us. The demand comes from us. We dictate on a demand that this is for the suffering of our ancestors. This is for the humiliation and the murder. If you go to that museum and you go to that memorial, you have to understand why reparations are necessary. When you read those little synopses on why they hung somebody for something so trivial, for literally nothing, for no damn reason other than I just gonna do it. I just want to kill. I just want to lynch you. They showed one piece of this one brother who escaped, and the lure of home brought him back. They found out that he was back, and they hunted him down, and they made the announcement, we're going to hang him. 10,000 people. 10,000 people showed up. But that's not, there's been more, there's been many like that. Has an entertainment. Some argue that the word picnic comes from that. That they picked a nigga to hang and people came out. We do know, because we have the proof of postcards. Postcards being developed, a picture taken of a brother being burned alive or being mutilated or hanging, and a postcard, a sister or a child. A lot of times the information is there because the Caucasian is so bold. It wasn't something that he hid. He didn't hide his hatred and disdain for African people. He exemplified it. He exposed, I'm going to kill him for nothing. And yet we think that the people that did this to us for hundreds of years will somehow have a damn epiphany and then say, hey, you know, I was so wrong. I'm so sorry. I want to make amends. I want to correct what has happened. The only way that can be done is you start all over. You can't start from where you are right now. Do you know the income inequality is so huge? That is so vast. So the chasm is so huge that it would take over 230 years to have income equality, where Caucasians' income and our income is the same. So you know that'll never happen. Not in their world. Because in their world, there is no equality. in their world, just like Abraham Lincoln said, there must be a superior position and an inferior position established, and I, as much as any man, is having the superior position assigned to the whites. Hell with Lincoln. High rates of fathers in the community. Let me read this again. Despite the sobering reality conveyed in this report, the results suggest that there are things that can be done to alleviate the crisis of income inequality and a lack of intergenerational mobility among American African people. In neighborhoods with low levels of poverty, according to the study, there are two factors which translate into better outcomes for American African people, and particularly American African men, and a narrowing of the economic disparities. High rates of fathers present in the community, regardless of whether a particular American African man had his father present or whether his parents were married, but rather indicating the role of fathers as role models and their impact on social norms and low levels of racial bias by Caucasian. So if they're saying if you have fathers and Caucasians may be a little more fair to whatever degree, you'll have better outcomes. Okay. Can understand that, but that ain't happening. The study found that American African men who moved to communities with improved environmental factors, lower levels of racism, poverty, and more fathers found themselves with less prison and higher income. At the same time, American Africans who grew up in these communities have a higher risk of downward mobility compared to Caucasian men. Let me read that one again. At the same time, the American African men who grew up in these communities, higher income level communities with men present, have a higher risk of a downward mobility compared to Caucasian men. Yes, because this is theirs, not ours. This is for their benefit, not ours. This is not a system of equality. This is not a system of fairness and justice. They don't operate on that. But yet we continue to expect that. We continue to hope and pray for that. This shows the racial income gap is not fixed, but rather can be changed. It could, but it ain't. It won't. No matter how much you think it should be or want it to be, it won't. So myth number five. The solutions to bridging the racial income gap are simple and easy. That is a show enough myth. The solutions. When people talk about, I want to bring some solutions. Listen to this, brothers and sisters. There is only one solution, which is the ultimate solution. And that is independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty for African people. If you think you can come up with a solution where African people here in America or anywhere else where Caucasians are, where they live in harmony and peace with one another and share in the bounty and share in the environment and share food and so forth and so on. Stop it. Although environment provides a solution to inequality, or at least a cause, the problem with overcoming the income gap with respect to culture is that few American African children are raised in areas that facilitate upward mobility, the study found. The areas they're raised in, they don't see it. When I was a member and helped start 100 Black Men in Milwaukee, and then we became affiliated with 100 Black Men nationally, and we came up with saying is what they see is what they'll be. If you can't see it, you can't achieve it. You're not even seeing it. You can't even see the reality of the situation. It ain't going to happen. While while 63% of Caucasian children are raised in neighborhoods with a poverty rate lower than 10% and with over half of fathers present. This is the case for only 5% of our children. 63% of Caucasian children are raised in neighborhoods with poverty rate lower than 10%. But in the case of us, only 5%, according to the report, of our children. Further, given the fact that American African and Caucasian boys have such dramatically different outcomes when they emerge from comparable family circumstances, the study concludes new policies are required. Yeah, more policies. We need some policies here. A lot of times this shit ain't worth the paper it's printed on. These Caucasians always have some papers of this, that, and the other. Some amendments, some documents. They ain't worth the paper they printed on. Because there's no sincerity. There's no real commitment. Because that has to come from Caucasians. The only thing, if that's what you want to happen, if that's what you want to happen. But see, I know that's not going to happen, so I don't care whether they do or not. What I care about is what we do, how we think, how we should love and support and trust and work with one another to change this dynamic. That's what I care about. Further, given the fact that American African and Caucasian boys have such dramatically different outcomes when they emerge from comparable family circumstances, the study concludes new policies are required. The solutions such as cash transfers and measures to increase financial resources for the current generation will do nothing, I repeat, will do nothing to narrow long-term racial disparities unless they impact intergenerational mobility. That's the best, that's the real deal right there that this article is saying. The study concludes new policies are required. Yeah, okay. And solutions such as cash transfers and measures to increase financial resources for the current generation will do nothing to narrow long-term racial disparities unless there's an impact on intergenerational mobility. The policies that reduce residential segregation or enable American African and Caucasian children to attend the same schools without achieving racial integration within neighborhoods and schools would also likely leave much of the gap in place. Initiatives whose impact across neighborhoods and class lines and increase upper mobility specifically for American African young men hold the greatest promises for narrowing this, quote, black-white gap. Examples of measures with potential include efforts to reduce racism in the criminal justice system. Ain't happening. Initiatives to address Caucasian racial bias. Ain't happening. Oh, mentoring. It's another word you shouldn't use. Mentor. Mentoring. Mentor. Go look up the Odyssey, Greek. Supposedly, Odysseus, gave his son to mentor. He gave his son to the man named Mentor, where you get the word mentor and mentoring. And he sexually abused his son. Because Greeks, that's what they was about. Homosexuality. Pedophilia. There are statues that Greeks made of men embracing men. There are statues that Greeks made with men, with little young boys. And in the story, Mentor, after Ulysses had been gone a while, had been messing with his son. So use the African word jigna. So jigna programs geared towards American African boys and efforts to increase cross-racial interaction, according to a report, will be effective. Because to me, there ain't a damn thing that you're going to be able to do with Caucasians' bias. This is their society. They shaped and fashioned this society in their image and in their interest for their prosperity. They didn't create, they didn't steal this and damn near wiped out the indigenous people, the Native American, the Native people. They didn't take this for some multicultural, multilingual, multiracial, none of that experiment. They didn't do that. They give lip service to those kinds of things because they don't care about that. The only thing they care about is maintaining their positions of dominance and control. I understand Brother Byron Stevenson's purpose in creating the museum. I do. I understand his purpose in trying to make us and, of course, them, because like I said yesterday when I was there, the majority of people who were there at the memorial and at the museum are Caucasian. And, you know, aside from the Caucasian lady putting her hand over our shoulders saying, I'm so sorry. I'm just so sorry. You know, and I know there are some Caucasians and some argue having a guilt trip. We got a caller, 470. Good afternoon.
Greetings, Okolo.
Greetings, my sister. Greetings.
How's it going?
Good.
It's so great to have something unapologetically black.
Exactly, dear. The African. I understand that. It really is.
Yes.
Cause see.
Yes.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, I finally took the time out to call you. I said, oh, I got this card here. Let me see who this is. Let me call Brother Oshie and give some respect. So I know it's pretty close to almost 1 o'clock. I didn't know if it was at night or up in the day. So
right. Well, now you know. Yeah,
yeah. So, and I will definitely tell others, my brother's friend. So much peace and blessings. I'll get back with you.
All right. Thank you so much for calling. And please
okay.
continue to listen.
Okay,
we're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern time.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Santi Sana. Peace. Thank you, my sister, for calling. That's great. Great call.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Okay. And, you know, I do this every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern and all the times that are germane to wherever you are. And I do this because it's my contribution and to help our people. I'm trying to find the right word to acquire or establish or to change or whatever. Our minds. That's point blank. It's about the mind. That's what this program is about. This program is dedicated, committed to helping to free our minds. Because when you look at that piece that's been going around from a Dr. Phil program with the young teenage American African young lady who is adamant about being Caucasian. I mean, she's adamant. She has firmly in her mind. Her skin is brown. It ain't even high yellow. Her skin is brown. Her lips. She need to do something about it. I shouldn't say that about this young sister, but she should do something about her teeth. Not that she has a gap, because I think gaps, you know, especially the middle gap, that's kind of sexy, but I ain't got no problem with that. But she believes she's Caucasian. She believes her hair is naturally straight. She believes, there is something that you can do to yourself personally through deep meditation and mind, that you can believe whatever. It ain't true, but you can believe it. And the world will tell you otherwise consistently, but you can still believe it. So she believes adamantly that she's Caucasian. And she hates us. She hates herself. She believes that Caucasians are beautiful and most intelligent and are nice. She need to take her ass down to Montgomery, Alabama. That's what she need to do. Her mama should run her ass down to Montgomery, Alabama, and tell her, say, if you said this in prior to whatever year, in fact, you know what? Right now, that don't make no difference. I'm saying, yeah, you need to say this some years ago. No, she could say that right now, what she's saying, because there's some Caucasians right now who have either seen that or heard that and angry as hell at how she's saying that she's white. I'll put that nigger bitch in her place. How dare her? So you can say it, my sister, but you need help. You need serious help. You need some serious help. Because no matter how hard you want to try or believe, there was another dude that did the same thing some many years ago. And he was on Phil Donahue, I believe it was. And he said, heavy set brother, once again, brown skin, not real dark, not real light, but in that, unmistakably, there is no mistake to who you are and what you look like to anybody outside of you. Now, you can say you Caucasian, but your appearance says otherwise, It's just like other groups of human beings on the planet, because of European, Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege, which that's what I say that it is in their situation. European, Caucasian extremism. I don't say superiority, because they're not, but they're very extreme. And what they have done to humanity is extreme. Racism, because they created race. They created it. And of course, they seek privilege over everybody. So that's what it is. So when you can say that, then you want to be part of that. And you might be in a circle that might be cool with that. But I'll venture to say the larger Caucasian group will nullify that. Will put you in your place. So you may have a little comfortable setting of individuals that know that that's who you desire to be, like them, and may play along. But the reality is, the real Caucasian society will put you in your place, because if it comes down to it, you know what's going to happen. You can Caucasianize yourself as much as you want, but it ain't happening. So I hope you appreciate you listening in today. For those who called in, for the sister, I appreciate her call. You know, and I appreciate for any of, and all of the brothers and sisters who listen online. Because just like the sister said, you know, a program that is uncompromisingly, I'm unapologetically African. This program is unapologetically African. We will talk about on this program four things: independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty for African people. Because everything else outside of that is moot. It's just jaw-jagging. It's just Putin and pontificating. Because the real subject, the real discourse is, and I don't want to argue with anybody. I especially don't want to argue with us about being free, self-determining, liberated, sovereign. To me, that I don't want that argument. And I don't want to argue with Caucasians. When I discuss this, what I want is for brothers and sisters to say, yes, how do we achieve it? Let's work on methods of achieving independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty for African people. Let's work on that. Brothers and sisters, we end this program like we end all of our programs here on African Perspectives on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We ended with the words of Stephen Biko: the most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind, but not just the MIND, but the MINE, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, Shemhotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Also, Abibi Fahodia. Abibi Fahodia means our victorious destiny. Abibi Fahodia.